Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm excited to be talking to the wonderful Sally Beaton. Sally is a holistic nutritionist and women's coach and the author of Get Your Sparkle Back, which I will let her tell you all about during the course of our conversation. Sally, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I love everything you do. So I'm so excited to be on your podcast. My name is Sally, and like Davinia said, I'm a women's holistic nutritionist and women's coach, and I wrote a book to help women get their sparkle back. The main aim of what I do is to help women, lots of women who run their own businesses mainly, to help them with their hormones, their health, and their happiness, to make sure that their body and minds are thriving as much as their businesses and bank accounts.
Awesome. And as you can imagine, that bit at the end there is, of course, what Raincheck is focused on, the bank balances. But I have to say, you know, from Raincheck's inception 3 years ago, one of the things that I've always made a big effort to stress is the relationship between our financial wellness, our holistic wellness, and the contribution that, you know, having solid financial foundations makes to our overall sense of well-being. So I guess given the kind of work that you do and that brilliant description you've given just there, what do you see as the relationship between our physical wellness and financial wellness?
So every aspect of our life is completely interlinked. Mm-hmm. So holistic just means whole. And that's why I was never going to be the sort of nutritionist that looked at your diet and said, these are the changes you make. Like, as a holistic nutritionist, I look at what's going on in your lifestyle, what's going on in your business, what's maybe even going on with your money worries, because everything is linked to our health. Everything that's part of our life, our relationships, our day-to-day work, our hobbies, our spiritual beliefs, they are all linked with our health and therefore all linked with our wealth. Those things are just so interrelated, and neither should be got out of balance or out of, we shouldn't obsess over one to the detriment of the other. So some people will obsess on the making of the money and happily let their health get to a really dangerous place, to burnout. Or the other thing that can happen a lot in the wellness industry or kind of some holistic businesses, they focus so much on the healing and the health of the body whilst they're not profiting from the gifts that they're sharing with the world, which can be very stressful and means that the wonderful gifts that they've got are not sustainable. Yes. So yeah, for me, you shouldn't get out of balance in any area of your life. This holistic, this integration of all these aspects, not elevating one element above any other. As, you know, like I said, biological, spiritual, emotional beings, just have an overview of all those elements and see which one have I not been taking care of, and just take a little bit more care of it going forward.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's interesting for me is this, you know, the significance of balance and different people's interpretation of that. You know, for a long time, we had this fixation on work-life balance, for example. And, you know, lots of us, you know, automatically assumed that meant you had to have 50-50, like, you know, 50% of your life had to be, or your life had to be divided into 50%, you know, focused on work and then 50% focused on the rest of your life. When actually for lots of us, particularly those of us that run our own businesses, we don't have the luxury of being able to compartmentalize our lives in that way. And I speak for myself when I say this, you know, Raincheck is kind of infused through every aspect of my life. You know, even the girls are part of it, and they'll ask me, you know, mommy, what did you do today? Mm. Who did you speak to? What kinds of conversations are you having? So it's very much a part of my existence. And so on that basis, I have to be very careful about making sure that it doesn't, that, you know, I'm not out of kilter in the way that you describe, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that 50-50 kind of even split is appropriate for me. And I think, you know, finding that rhythm that works for you without throwing yourself into real chaos, you know, whether it be from a mental wellness, emotional wellness, physical wellness perspective, I think is really, really key.
I think the two things with that I'd say is, like, when you look like our businesses should kind of come into every areas of our life, as should our health, mm-hmm. as should our other beliefs. So, you know, like, for instance, before I did this podcast, I went to the gym because that's part of my working mm-hmm. day. I don't see that as a compartmentalized, yes. right, work for this long. Like, going to the gym to keep my body strong and my health in a good place is as much part of my working day as sitting at the laptop Definitely. Bashing away. So that idea that this stuff is working, you know, lots of us have that passion and that need to have successful businesses. And so the minute we can integrate those habits as part of our working day and not be like, well, I should be doing this when, you know, the office hours yes. finish or whatever, is really is a big mind shift after we're so used to working in the factory, clocking in, clocking mm-hmm. out 9 to 5 hours. We're getting better, but it's still so entrenched in our culture that we, you know, if we're not sat on a factory line, then we're sat at our desk for that amount. And then we do our hobbies or our socializing or our health stuff. And the other thing that's important within that is actually, for me, it's really important that we look at work and our life in the seasons. So sometimes you have a season of a lot of desk work. Mm-hmm. And then the next season, it might be like you have a bit more free time, and we can kind of take a nod from the physical seasons and from our cycle as a woman. But we, again, that looking at holistically, looking at a month or a year in terms of your business instead of day to day, week to week, is really important.
Yeah, no, I love that. So, Sally, what does it mean to you to be a wealthy woman, not just financially? And what steps are you taking to achieve this?
So wealth to me is very specific, isn't it, to each individual. Mm. So for me, it's living somewhere that brings me peace, being able to afford the food that I know nourishes me, being able to have time to rest when my body needs that and when I'd like that, and being able to help those who I believe need it most. That to me is, yeah, my idea of wealth.
I love that. You know, I saw a meme that I shared on the Raincheck feed a few months ago that was basically speaking to this idea of money buying happiness, whether or not money buys happiness. And, you know, there's this whole, it's a very polarizing debate. You know, there are lots of people that are very much, of course, in the camp of, how can money buy happiness? You know, happiness is an intrinsic thing that's completely separate and detached from, you know, financial gain. But then, you know, from my perspective, and I think, you know, that the suggestion that was given by this particular post was that actually money may not directly buy happiness, but it affords you that peace of mind in lots of ways. It can buy you time to rest. It can mean that, you know, your choices around diet might be different because you have the ability to buy organic, for example, or, you know, buy more fresh produce, live in an area that is less polluted, you know, all of these different things. Yeah. So it's about using money as a tool and recognizing it as such, rather than thinking of it as being imbued with any kind of, you know, positive or negative sentiment. It's just the tool. And it's how we make use of that tool to drive the decisions that we make, I think, around our well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's so important. That's why it's so important you asked me that question, and so important that people ask themselves, because like I said, everyone's idea of being wealthy is different. So that you know, because, you know, for years of my life, I've only just realized in the last year what I think wealth is and what I'm working towards, because up until then, the story is like, well, you're just accumulating it. But that's no different to accumulating health. You might be getting stronger and fitter, but what do you want that health for? It's the same. The question is, why are you getting healthy? So it's like, okay, because I want to have more energy. Okay, what do you want to do with that energy? Well, I want to spend more time with people I love or set up more businesses. Yes. So we should ask that question for every area of our life that we're trying to accumulate more, be that knowledge, wealth, health, Yeah,
definitely. I mean, one of the questions that I always ask of the Rainmaker community is, you know, what would you ask for if you knew the answer was going to be yes? So, you know, as women, you know, or as people, but, you know, of course, in our work, you know, focusing primarily on women, there are a number of different ways that we can inhibit ourselves, and we censor even our own thoughts. As soon as, you know, we daydream, we squash that thought, you know, we lose the ability to dream, you know, beyond childhood. And then, you know, some of those aspirations that we previously, you know, really held dear to our hearts, we just kind of abandon them and say, oh, that's unrealistic, or that's not for people like me. And so one of the things that I always encourage, of course, you know, at Raincheck, we're talking about helping women build sustainable wealth over the long term, but it's also recognizing, exactly as you say, Sally, that relationship between all these different facets of our wealth, and to open up their imaginations again, because we're not trying to build wealth for its own sake. We're not trying to accumulate all this cash to kind of sit in our houses and hoard it, and, you know, and be really afraid of other people, that people are going to steal this wealth away and we've got to protect it at all costs. It's about enjoying your life and recognizing the role that, you know, having financial security can play in facilitating that. But exactly as you describe, what wealth looks like to you is different from another person, and I'm sure it will be the same across your client base, you know, based on the conversations you have with them too. So one of the things that I love about, you know, the conversations that we've had in the past, Sally, and your Instagram feed in particular. So for anybody that is not following Sally on Instagram, please do so, because honestly, it brightens my day every day. It's one of the best curated feeds. But you talk such a lot about guilt and pleasure and rest and the relationship between these things. And some of the messages that women in particular internalize about all three. And you did a great interview recently in which you talked about this concept that you call the pleasure deficit, which I think is brilliant and encapsulates this really well. So can you share with everyone what you mean by this and why this deficit exists in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. So is this... I'm just wondering if people have little ones listening.
Oh, yes. So, yeah.
When I'm talking about pleasure in our female bodies.
Yes.
I'm going to mention a part of our female anatomy that you might want to either just put headphones in for this part. You know, we shouldn't have to mute it, yes. But in the context of a family, might be helpful.
Or if you're driving in a car on the school run. Yes. Good point.
So when I'm looking at... doing my studies on women's bodies and women's health and how we can have the best health, the best lives, the best amount of energy. And I look around and wonder why women aren't having that, why we're seeing more chronic health problems, more low energy, more hormonal issues. One area of the body that's completely been neglected is an organ that we have called the clitoris. And it is an organ, and it's been what I would say hypersexualized. So whenever we think about it and talk about it, we only think of it in the realms of sexual activity. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it has a wider context and a wider meaning in relation to our bodies and our needs as women. So I always say, in the same way we have a heart and the kind of physical ability of that organ is to pump blood around our body, keep us alive that way. But the heart is a symbolic organ. It's what we hold when we think of someone we love. It's what, you know, that feeling in your heart, that's love, that's kind of that life energy force. And our clitoris also holds a symbolic meaning because it's the only organ in all humans, that sole purpose is designed for pleasure. So it can physically do that, obviously, with sexual activity. But the wider context of that is that women's bodies and our lives are created to experience pleasure, to give and receive pleasure. Women are very good at giving pleasure. And even by pleasure, again, I'm not thinking just sexually. I'm thinking every day, those general things of loving and keeping people alive and checking in on your friends and your family and your kids, that brings them pleasure and safety and joy from how you are. How many women receive that back into their own lives? And if they do, it will be at a much lower rate than they're giving out every day. So women have, like I said, what I call a pleasure deficit, in that they are so used to creating lives and worlds for other people where they get to experience pleasure and have pleasurable thoughts and activities, and they don't get that for themselves, because the world's been set up that a woman experiencing pleasure is, you know, kind of a bit excessive and not spiritual and, you know, kind of gluttonous. And so it's very embedded that pleasure is not a necessity for keeping women's bodies alive and having a happy life, when it's the opposite. So when women think a pleasurable thought or they experience pleasure, their body releases something called nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is one of the most amazing chemicals that can be released in our bodies for the health and happiness benefits. It's what lights up a firefly. Mm. It's the same chemical. So women who are missing that glow and that sparkle are often missing that pleasure, that nitric oxide being, you know, just throughout the veins in their body.
Wow.
It has huge medical benefits in terms of reducing tumors, reducing viruses, boosting your immune system. So it's really something we want. But what woman would ever think to boost her immune system, oh, I need more pleasure in my life? You know, they'd think, well, no, that's silly. I don't have time. And again, we've got this idea based from religion and society that, you know, a woman experiencing pleasure is someone who just has too much time on her hands. When it's a really important health protocol that can really change your life, if you start infusing bits of pleasure back into your life in small or big ways. And like I said, the reason we know there is this pleasure deficit is, and women are so starved of pleasure, is because of the negative habits that women struggle with. So the overeating, the overspending, all these sort of things, the overdrinking, all these things are women's bodies crying out for that nutrition of pleasure. And because they're so starved of it, that's what we happen. If we're starved of a nutrient, we tend to overeat in some way or something like that. That's what our body does. Women get to the end of the day and they know, their body knows they've had no pleasure. So they drink more wine than they should, or they eat more chocolate than they should, or they head online because they are trying to get that pleasure hit, which should have been infused throughout their day in some way.
I mean, this is crazy to me. Like, I'm thinking it's such a beautiful analogy to think of the firefly. You know, when you think of, you know, how they can light up the sky, and the idea that, you know, there is this chemical imbalance if we are not receiving pleasure in the right way. And that quite literally, so when you talk about, you know, helping women regain their sparkle, quite literally, we're talking about, you know, it's like when you see someone and you're like, oh my gosh, you're glowing, or, you know, when you see someone smile and it lights up their face. And obviously, you know, it's that exchange of energy that has given them this rapid injection or infusion of pleasure. It's crazy to think of that in that way. It's really, you know, it's a really vivid thought, but, you know, with very serious consequences if it's not addressed.
And women would buy the face cream or take the injection of it, but they don't realize, like, and like you said, that glow, that, you know, it is released when a woman has an orgasm and has that kind of flush, but that pleasure can be released through even pleasurable thoughts, even through taking a walk in nature, even through having a pleasurable memory, or just taking time to pleasurably drink your tea or coffee, or pleasurably lie down and smell your favorite essential oil, or pleasurably rub some your face cream in instead of slapping it on. Like, it can be the most indulgent, expensive thing to find pleasure. We can infuse that into our days every day. And like you said, therefore we can infuse that glow, that sparkle, in the most physical of ways into our body and our lives.
So, I mean, everything that you say makes perfect sense, and would explain, you know, the points in my life, or when I look at pictures and I'm like, oh God, like, look at your complexion, Dav, it's a bit grey. Or, you know, when I'm really vibrant and really glowing. And of course, you know, as you know, Sally, you know, one of the things that, you know, I have done in the last 12 months, which was one of the aspirations that I had, was to move to this island, because I knew that, you know, environment counts for so much with lots of us. And of course, it doesn't mean that you know, you don't drag the same stresses and strains with you. But for me, I knew that, you know, relocating to one of my favorite places in the world, particularly at this time in my life, would make a massive contribution to my overall sense of well-being, to how radiant I felt every day. And I knew that because having had the experience of coming here over the course of my childhood and into early adulthood, I knew the impact that it had on me. And therefore, you know, that was the kind of feeling and the peace that I was striving towards. But it took a long time from a mental perspective to make that shift in terms of giving myself permission to do something that arguably is perceived as radical, particularly when you have small children. I think there's lots of ways that as parents, we start to say, oh, well, I can't do that now because the kids are too young, or I can't do that because it's not fair on the kids, or it's going to disrupt them. And all of these different things that we do to preclude ourselves from stepping into our own kind of pleasure field. What would you say to those women, you know, whether they are mothers or not, around how they can break through that guilt barrier that stops them from doing so much? And then, you know, you find yourself in, you know, years later going, why didn't I take that decision? Because what's the worst that could have happened? You know, how do you help them to unblock some of those blockages?
So most women won't make those big decisions based on it being something that they want. Because most women don't feel worthy, and most women have been told it would be selfish to do something just for you. So what I say to most women is, how you are living your life is the biggest indicator of how, if you have children, how your children or other small people around you who are watching you will live their life.
Couldn't agree
more.
So
if you have carried on the behavior, if you've carried on the behavior of your mum or your grandma who refused to rest and completely serves everyone and everyone else, and but always moans about their health or their life, has never had any time for themselves, you are basically creating the blueprint for the generations behind you to grow up like that. That's the blueprint I grew up with, and I had to decide that I did not want any child watching how I live my life to grow up with the idea that rest is gluttonous, or me doing something lovely is selfish, or me believing that my health is important was not putting everyone else first. Like, I had to change the story, you know, in kind of religious language, it's like almost break those generational curses where women have been unhappy and with chronic health conditions for too long, and have not had a vibrancy which every woman deserves to live with. There'll always be times where that we don't have that, because that's how the seasons of life go. But overall, if I think about my own mum or my grandmothers, I don't see a lot out of their lives that inspired me to be better. They're quite sad when I think of it, because there was a lot of health issues, a lot of mental and physical health issues, and a lot of sadness and a lot of moaning and a lot of martyrdom. And I just think we've got to move past that. We've got to move past that. And if you don't believe for yourself you're worth it, if you don't want to do it for yourself because, you know, your self-confidence is quite low or you're struggling, do it for every child, whether you have your own children, nieces, nephews, or just the generation behind you. Do it for them. Let's say no more of being martyrs, no more of normalizing women being depressed, oppressed, you know? Like, let's normalize us being these vibrant, inspirational women who, you know, can fulfill our dreams, who can change country if we want to, who can set up a business, who can decide not to set up a business, whatever that thing is. Like, be the change.
Definitely. You know, one of the quotes that I hold very close to my heart, and I have to remind myself of this when I find myself whinging, I'm very good at kind of giving myself a really harsh pep talk, and the Rainmakers know this, like, I'm queen of tough love, and I do it to myself, because we occasionally find ourselves dipping into these ditches or these kind of wells of, oh God, woe is me, it's so hard. Oh,
and
gosh.
Programs you will have inherited that program.
Definitely, gosh, poor Dav. It's yes, definitely. And so one of the quotes that I remind myself of is, you know, one of the most common ways one of the most common ways women give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. And I remind myself of that when I'm in this mode. I'm like, Dav, you're acting like you don't have the power to change your circumstances. Even if the options available to you are undesirable, there are still options. There is always an option A and an option B at least. And so you have to decide on balance which one is going to be best for you right now. So with all things being equal, what is the best decision you can do with the conditions that you find yourself within right now? And when I think about, you know, the interesting thing about what you're saying is that, of course, Sally, you and I are from completely different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds and everything else and different upbringings, but how it transcends culture. You know, sometimes you can think, well, certain things are unique to ethnic minority cultures, whether they be, for example, Indian, Caribbean, African, Pakistani, whatever it may be. And, you know, white Anglo-Saxon culture is different. But certainly when it comes to, you know, this relationship and as you describe, you know, mothers, daughters, grandmothers and what you pick up by osmosis, by being in the presence of elders and seeing how they respond to life and whether they're seizing it by the horns or whether they're kind of complacent and despondent and just kind of, oh, well, you know, life happens to me and I don't have any agency in my life. And, you know, exactly as you describe, I grew up with this culture of women serving the men. And, you know, even though it's a very Caribbean culture, it's very matriarchal. I've talked about that all the time, but there is still very much, you know, with the presence of men, that they in some way held the casting vote. They had the final decision that we would serve them, that we would be deferential to them in some way. And, you know, but I also grew up with the example of a grandmother who was so fearless and who, you know, of that generation who, you know, we come from big families, had five children. So her and my granddad are raising these five children, both worked. But still would carve out time, despite working very grueling shifts, you know, factory work like lots of that generation did, and would still take herself away on holiday. She was the first one in our family to go to Ibiza before Ibiza was a thing.
Amazing.
And who could tell us how beautiful Ibiza was and how she couldn't understand this depiction of Ibiza as being, you know, for full of drinking culture. You know, she would go to these really beautiful parts of the island. Or, you know, she was the first person I knew to ever go and get a massage. And I would be like, oh my God, you're paying someone to just rub you with oil. And she's like, yeah, I don't understand. She would go and get facials. I mean, my gran was somebody who just embodied all of these things because she was like, I don't feel good in this situation. And I know what I need to do to feel good. And it's these things. Mm. So that's what I'm going to go and do. And I talk about her all the time as being, you know, the real inspiration and impetus for Raincheck, because as you can imagine, based on those descriptions alone, not least, you know, her financial wizardry, she is just somebody that was not afraid to recognize I need pleasure in my life. And if I don't depend on another person to give that to me or to be responsible for my pleasure, I am responsible for it myself. And so when I talk about that quote about, you know, giving away our power, there are probably instances in her life where she did give away that power and depend on my granddad in a way that she didn't like. And when she reclaimed that power and said, why am I depending on William for this? I mean, I love my granddad, but do you know what I mean? Why am I depending on William?
Yeah, of course.
I know what to do to feel good. He doesn't know what I'm thinking and feeling, and I know, and I'm going to diagnose it and I'm going to sort it out. Which I think is a brilliant approach and response
Amazing. To these things. Amazing. What, like, true inspiration, definition of inspiration, like you said, in circumstances where you'd go, oh, well, you know, obviously she wouldn't go to Ibiza and have a massage, and she did. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And you, and again, like, you are benefiting from seeing that.
Yes.
So how much more will your children and your grandchildren or any children around you benefit from seeing what you've done and go, oh, do you remember when Auntie Dav just left and went and moved, like, to have island life? How inspirational. Now I know I can do that. Like, those decisions that we think we're making for ourselves, we are making them for ourselves, but we are making them for every other little girl or woman who's felt too scared or unworthy of making those decisions as well.
Definitely. So I don't know whether this will be a good thing in your mind or a bad thing, but women and wellness is really trending right now. It's a bit like women and money. I've talked before about how you can step into these echo chambers, particularly on social media, where all you're seeing is the same kind of stuff, this bombardment of messages about either women and wellness or women and money and what we should be doing and the various challenges we face. But of course, you know, with anything that's trending, you see big organizations clamoring to get a piece of the action. And recently there was a popular beauty brand that launched a menopause kit full of the latest products, which they claimed would soothe and support women going through this transition. Do you think this is a helpful way to demonstrate support for something that all women face and will go through, or is it undermining to the realities that so many of us will face at this, you know, very vulnerable point in our lives?
I mean, I would say most solutions I see are sticky plasters, because if these companies actually, so even the idea of like, let's soothe women through the menopause, you are not actually meant to soothe yourself through the menopause. The menopause is literally a set on fire time in your life of everything that no longer works for you, including working for a big company that hasn't ever cared for your needs and wants to maybe give you a little packet with some essential oils in, or I don't know, what's in the packet or whatever, to say, here we are, you with your funny hot flushes. And, you know, we know it's going to, you know, because you're this age now. I actually find it a bit patronizing, because if you actually knew the power of the menopause and knew the shifts that were happening in a woman's brain and body, you would not just give her a little pack to soothe herself. You would set up groups to say, okay, how do we transition you into this next important stage of your life where possibly nothing should stay the same? Your level of servitude to your family and your workplace, if you've been a gym bunny going every day and doing a very testosterone fueled thing, like that should change, and you should get back in touch with dancing or movement or just your body that you've probably neglected for the last 10 years. Like, the menopause is meant to be the end, the official kind of ending of your like fertile years, your reproductive years, is also meant to signify a shift from nurturing hormones to hormones of rebirth. It's meant to be a rebirth. Japanese call it the second spring of your life. So you're meant to And again, how different the shift from our view of the menopause. We kind of think, oh, hot flashes, misery, And the Japanese, they have less symptoms, yes, because of their diet and things like that, but also because this idea that it's a second spring, that women can look forward to this new energy coming forth where they no longer prioritize the needs of everyone else above themselves. They can look forward to a time where their hobbies are important, their health is important, their dreams are important. That's what the menopause is meant to be. So like I said, whenever I see like a big corporation doing something for the menopause, I'm like, I don't think you really want to help women through the true menopause. You might want to help them through our caricatured version of hot flushes and mood swings. But if you knew that even that increase in rage during the perimenopause and menopause was there to literally burn things out of your life that are no longer meant to be there, that we have an increase of a hormone, GnRH, which is called the rage hormone. And the reason that increases in those years is not because we're meant to be like, oh, we're losing our minds. We're meant to start getting angry at a world set up not to support women, at a family situation where we take on most of the emotional labor or housework or whatever it is. We're meant to be angry at a society that tells us we can't age. That rage is there to literally rocket launch us into a different place where we can be more happy and healthy and enjoy this second spring of our life.
Oh, that sounds, I love the idea of a second spring. And you're right, it's a much better depiction than, as you say, the caricature of sitcoms, women sticking their head in the freezer and, you know, people making jokes about, oh, is she going through the change and the hot flushes and what have you. So it's so reductive when, you know, increasingly I see women talking about perimenopausal symptoms. And again, even that as a concept was something that was completely alien to me. So
And it's about how we can tell women that, oh, there's something going wrong in your body as opposed to something going right. So we can say, oh, there's something going wrong because you're having a hot flush, you need this medication, instead of saying that hot flush, one, is part of this idea of this rising anger, this need to burn things out your body and life that no longer support you. But also, those hot flushes can reduce as much in your body as an estrogen patch. In a study, it was about the same as if you start meditating. Wow. Like that. So we, again, but does it suit the world if a woman starts meditating for half an hour a day? No, because you're still meant to, we need you to do all the other things. We need you to look after your elderly parents and your children and still come to work on time.
Yep.
So it suits the world if we just keep soothing and medicating women rather than saying, what is the truth behind this rage, this symptom? Yeah, whatever comes up.
Yeah. Okay, so of course this is a podcast about women living life on their own terms and our relationship with money. And one of the things that, you know, my background is in investment management. So investing was always one of the core planks that I, you know, was really keen to make sure women felt comfortable in doing so that they were able to make the right investments in themselves and in, you know, various financial instruments that could ultimately help them to accrue wealth over the long term. But when we talk about investing, one of the things I always say is that we are each of us our biggest investment by far. What has been your biggest investment in yourself and how has it transformed you?
So my biggest investment, which fits in perfectly with this podcast, and I promise you I haven't just made it up to kind of fit in with the money thing of this podcast, but from 18 months ago, I started investing in a money coach. So once a month, I have a session with a money coach, and I realized women were coming to me and investing in their health because that was the thing that they didn't have the most knowledge on. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of knowledge in health, and it's just my absolute pleasure to give that to women. And I thought, well, I need a coach for the things that I don't have all this knowledge in. Or so I started working with a money coach, and that has definitely been my biggest investment. And the reason I've really, really enjoyed it and I'm still doing it is because my ideas have changed. So 18 months ago, when I started working with her, it was very much like, oh, okay, well, you know, this person's doing this, and, you know, I think I could do more of that. And again, because that's not necessarily how I work, we've come to a more like holistic approach of looking at how I make money over a year or a month, as opposed to what I'm doing day in, day out, looking at the seasons, there being seasons in my business. And yeah, I've just loved that so much. So that's how I know the people who are part of Raintech would just be having, like, it's one of the best investments they could be making, because again, women are not taught these things, and you have that gift of making it so approachable, of breaking it down. That's what I do with health. I try and make women's health very understandable, so they don't have to read the big medical tomes or have all the lists of all their bloods back and not understand them.
Yeah,
it's really important they understand that. But that's what you are able to do with financial stuff. And it's so important that women, yeah, like I said, that their money and their physical health, to me, like, they're just so, so important, because we've lacked that education. We lack that confidence, and therefore we do struggle in those two areas.
Yeah. I think the thing for me, and it's brilliant to hear you talk about this, because I think the more women that can recognize, you know, any gaps or any deficits in, you know, in their knowledge bank. And this is not about saying, I'm always a bit funny about terms like financial literacy and financial education, although I have used them. I have used them in the past. Is that the women that I am privileged to work with, they are professional. They're supremely well-educated. They are firing on all cylinders in most aspects of their lives. But they recognize, you know what, I could probably do a bit better with my money management. Like, I'm earning this amount of money, but I'm not doing anything with it, or I don't really know what I'm doing. And I want to feel like I know what I'm doing. And so it's really about working with them. And exactly as you say, breaking it down in a way that's relatable, but non-patronizing, because these are smart cookies, and saying, this is what you can do for your personal circumstances, which will differ from that Rainmaker's circumstances. And this is how you can feel good about it. And then I'm going to send you off and you're going to fly by yourself. So this is not trying to create a relationship of dependency, which is
important.
It's that you, again, it's this back to this point about agency. You need to feel good about what you're doing and feel empowered and confident telling other people, because if one woman knows how to manage her money, she tells everyone else, including the men in her life, which I think is the most powerful thing of all. I love to know. It's lovely to hear that you've made that investment. It's obviously paying dividends. So thank you for sharing. Okay, so we've now come to the end of the interview, but I would really like to do three quick fire questions. I pick them at random. Okay, so number one, so we've talked before, you've probably seen this post on our Insta about the F off fund. I'm not going to say the F word. if you have an F off fund, Sally, what's yours for?
Definitely travel. Travel all the way. Like, I had so many years where I couldn't travel because I was quite ill. And also years when we had a dog, I used to get really anxious when we left. And my husband's from New Zealand. And so there's just this longing, especially after lockdown, I just more travel, more seeing the world, more experiencing different people's stories, cultures, food, beaches.
Food.
And food again.
Brilliant. Okay, so everybody that comes onto this podcast and everybody that is part of our wonderful community is, of course, referred to as a rainmaker. So complete this sentence. A rainmaker is someone who...
A rainmaker is someone who believes every single day of her life she's worth more and that her dreams were given to her for a reason.
Oh my God, I love that. Wow, that's like such a thoughtful and considered response. Brilliant. And then the final question, finish this sentence. Anyone that knows me would be surprised that secretly I am what?
Quite antisocial.
Wow, yeah. I mean, I'm surprised.
I love people. I do love socializing, but I have a need for my own company so much. So whereas before, like in my 20s or whatever, I'd be out every night, every decade that's gone on, my 30s, 40s, if I go out once now, I need like 2 weeks minimum of not going out again to just recalibrate and have my own time. Like I realize that it's a lot of energy being around other people and socializing. And I really enjoy occasional socializing. I really enjoy being around people I truly love and, you know, have a great energy, but I really enjoy not socializing too.
Yeah, same.
And no one would believe that of me because, you know, like I love chatting to people.
You're such a vibrant personality.
I love my own company. I love silence. I love peacefulness. Like that's same. What recharges me.
Same. And I'm exactly the same as you. Like I'm an extrovert. And I think people think of me as this raging extrovert, which I am in many situations, but certainly I've seen as time's gone on that I really value my own company way more. And I'm really happy with a party of one. This is the thing. As much as I'm a hype queen, I'm a real hype queen for myself as well. So I know what to do to please myself and make myself happy. So really resonates.
And again, it's that balance. So I don't know if like me, but if you were brought up, like people would tell me you're an extrovert. Oh, you're an extrovert. And it's so good. And we'll have, you know, we want you at this party and we'll put you on the quiet table at the wedding so you can chat to everyone.
Yes.
And so you get told that. And so then you start becoming more of that than you possibly are. And what I realize now is, again, like the kind of, you know, again, balance of the seasons, yin and yang, whatever kind of balance you look to in life. Yes, I'm an extrovert. I'm also an introvert. And those two things, you can be both of those things. Mm-hmm. And anytime you become an elevated version of one of those things, you kind of come out of balance and it affects you. But I'm happy for someone to call me an extrovert because there are times when I am, and I'm really happy to be seen as an introvert because I absolutely am too.
I love that. And I think that duality is a great place to end this interview, particularly as when we think about, you know, women just living life entirely on their own terms and not necessarily stepping into other people's expectations or projections that have been foisted upon them. It's really important that we're able to just define for ourselves who we are, even if it straddles seemingly polar opposite categories of personality.
And evolve. You're allowed to evolve as a woman. You don't have to, whatever someone said, oh, you're like this, don't ever think you have to stay there. You get to evolve every year, every decade. You get to decide who you are and who you are in this moment. Don't let anyone say, well, you're always like this or this is how you've been. You get to choose. You get to change whenever you want.
I love it. Sally, thank you so much for your time today. I feel like I could talk to you all day.
Where I know, we always could talk all day. I love chatting with you.
I know. Where can people find out more about you, your business, and your incredible book?
Okay, so you can... I've got a website, womenwithsparkle.com. You can follow me on Instagram, @womenwithsparkle. On my website, you can sign up to my newsletter. And also you can get my book from Amazon, Get Your Sparkle Back by Sally Beaton. And in that I talk about all the hormonal stuff we've talked about, the pleasure stuff we've talked about, and loads of other stuff to help you sparkle and glow like that firefly.
Yes. Oh my gosh. The firefly will be the symbol for this podcast for sure. Thank you, Sally. Have a great day.
You too, lovely. Thank you. Bye.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how RainCheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at RainCheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.